All right. Well, it's time to get started. Good evening. Welcome to our February 10th, 2022 Transportation Commission meeting, which we continue to have virtually over Zoom. Just as a reminder, please remember to keep yourself muted to avoid any background noise. Commissioners, you can participate in the meeting by using your raise hand function of the Zoom webinar. I will do my best. I'm set up to make sure I can call on you. As always, if I don't see you, please call my attention verbally as well. The chat function is not enabled and will not be used for these meetings. I will proceed with our roll call tonight. Vice Chair Sash?
Here.
Commissioner Beeson?
Present.
Commissioner Hallen?
Here.
Commissioner Kurtz?
Here.
Commissioner Rippon?
Here.
Commissioner Ting?
Here.
And we have a full quorum today. Moving on to item two of an agenda, approval of the agenda. Does anybody have any objections to approving the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. And we're going to move on to our oral and written communication portion of our meeting. We are still awaiting a protocol to be developed by the City Clerk's Office for all boards and commissions and staff liaison to follow on how to appropriately respond to public comment. Until we receive further guidance, there will be no commissioner discussions at this point of the agenda. Commissioners may choose to address issues that are raised by the public related to tonight's study session items during that study session item. And whenever relevant, staff will take note of public requests and the city will follow up as necessary.
Will do.
So we have today three people signed up. Kevin, you can go ahead and call them. Just as a reminder to our speakers, you have 3 minutes and please state your name and your address when you begin. Kevin, if you could please call them.
Okay, we have Michelle Wanamaker signed up first. So Michelle, I will click the allow you to talk button. So you should be able to provide your comments now to the commission.
Yes, thank you. Chair Marcianti and commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to address you. My name is Michelle Wanamaker. I live in Eastgate and my address is on file. I'd like to start out by complimenting staff and the consultants on the work they did to create this final draft of the MIP. It was worth the wait. This version is much better thought out, more clearly conveys the information, and much better presented than how the original individual pieces started out. But I do have a few concerns, including that there are lots of pedestrians and bicyclists during June to mid-September. But once the cold, rainy season set in, there is a dramatic decrease for about 8 to 9 months out of the year. How will this be taken into consideration when considering supply and demand units? Also, will the expected number of pedestrians and bicyclists be taken into consideration when selecting projects? And yes, the city has this data. At the Transportation Commission meeting in which MIP vehicular V over C values were discussed, it was my understanding that every commissioner agreed they did not want to increase any of the V over C ratio performance targets at system intersections. And remember, increasing a V over C ratio performance target means allowing traffic to worsen. So I was rather surprised to see on page 28 of volume 1 that the type 3 residential PMA in green is listed as a 0.85 V over C ratio performance target. Yet 3 of the 7, so nearly half of the existing MMAs, are at a 0.80. This includes MMA 11, Southeast Bellevue, which is the huge MMA that spreads from Eastgate's MMA/PMA southern boundary to the southern and eastern borders of the city, including all of Somerset, Lakemont, and Forest Drive. For those of you familiar with the Eastgate area, all of this cut through traffic using 148/150th as the alternative to I-405, increasing the V over C performance target to 0.85 would allow traffic to significantly worsen from Southeast 38th Street in Eastgate to the city's southern border before concurrency requires improvement projects. And all this traffic on Newport Way would be allowed to significantly worsen too. So was I mistaken? Or is the B over C performance target really supposed to be 0.80? And this final MIP document still lists 146th Avenue Southeast and East Gate between Southeast 36th Street and Newport Way as being a priority bicycle corridor. I can't find it listed as priority anywhere except here. I went to the bike and ped pages, the transportation department's web pages, looked through documents, plans, and maps. Not there. So I'm respectfully requesting that you remove the priority designation from this bicycle corridor. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Michelle, for your comments and your continued participation. Kevin, if you could call the next person.
Okay, next person on the list is Matt Jack. Matt, I have allowed you to talk, so your 3 minutes can begin now.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Good evening, Chair Marcianti, Commission members. My name is Matt Jack. I'm commenting on behalf of the Bellevue Downtown Association to communicate some feedback about the final MIP document. For some context, the Bellevue Downtown Association advocated support for the multimodal concurrency update, the transportation elements that your body advanced forward, and we applaud you for that work. But that wasn't all that we were tracking. We've been tracking the MIP since the very beginning with a first meeting January of 27th of last year, wrapping up our work on December 18th. And I'm here to communicate our feedback. In fact, I'm here to communicate that our BDA Transportation Committee supports the MIP and its goal to organize all of the city's transportation plans into a comprehensive data-driven framework that will inform all your decision-making. This is important work at a critical time when Bellevue is experiencing and planning for so much growth, especially in the MIP-designated Type 1 performance management areas that include downtown, Bellred, and Wilburton. I would like to note that the BDA Transportation Committee found alignment with MIP and our downtown access strategy and its desired outcomes. And this was a very important milestone in our work. In addition to our support of the MIP, I have some feedback for this group to consider. And that would be number one, factor in transportation demand management in the future. The committee supports the city's future work to refine TDM policies to help reduce single occupant vehicle trips during peak period. When this work is completed, we urge the city to incorporate TDM into the MIP as a measurable component for tracking success and informing improvements. Strong TDM programs will be very important for managing Bellevue's projected growth. Number two, advance the effort to establish a performance monitoring tool. Our committee members seek a little bit more clarity on the tool mentioned on page five. There is desire for a publicly accessible, user-friendly interface that showcases regularly updated performance data from the MIP. A resource of this nature will improve stakeholder engagement and guide community attention towards relevant transportation network improvements. Number three, be very clear about level of service standards. The MIP increase of level of standard in the Type 1 performance area from 0.95 to 1.0 is one thing that our members brought up. Some of our members are concerned that this change will yield more vehicular congestion, while other members voice that a successful multimodal system is designed to reduce the number of car trips, not congestion, because vehicular growth will outpace road capacity in a growing city that has a vibrant economy. So you understand that there's different schools of thought, but I think one thing that we need is some clarity when we make those big decisions. So we urge the city to be very clear on how these standards are adjusted to help strengthen the community's confidence. And then lastly, one note that I wanted to convey that was important to our members is insights into impact fees. So we understand that vehicular and non-vehicular impact fees are not part of the MIP scope, nor is it influenced by the MIP. However, this is a very important topic to a lot of our BDA members, and we're interested to understand if, how, when impact fees will be programmed into the city's work and how that will be related to the MIP. Oh, I need a glass of water. So with that said, I really just want to applaud you for your work. I've watched a lot of your meetings and tracked all of your efforts over this past year. The MIP was a very complicated project, multifaceted.
3 minutes, Matt.
And I just want to say thank you so much. So thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt, for your support and for your insightful comments as well. I believe there was one more person signed up, but I don't think I see anyone, Kevin.
Not here.
Okay. Perhaps they want to do it at the end of the meeting. So I think I will proceed to our next item in the agenda. So we have communications from City Council, Community Council, Boards and Commissions, and we do have an important communication today, and I'd like to welcome both Councilmember Robertson and Councilmember Sand, who are here today. And Councilmember Robertson, if you can, I will yield the floor to you for your communication.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to come and say goodbye to you. It's been such a wonderful 2 years, and I wanted to honor all of you for all the work that was done with the mobility implementation plan, with the multimodal concurrency standards, and now you're going to be dealing with the comp plan update transportation element coming up. So there's a lot of work that you've done that you should all be really proud of, and there's a lot more work to come, which I know that Janice will ably assist you with and guide you from the council perspective. So that was really it. I'll give you one last report, because as you know, the days of these meetings, I always go to the Transportation Policy Board at the Puget Sound Regional Council. Today, the Puget Sound Regional Council put the Bellevue's Main Off-Street Multipurpose Pathway, which is 108th Avenue to 112th Avenue project, onto one of the grant funding lists for just slightly over $1 million. That was money that we got them to reappropriate as it got, we got more money from the feds, and we competed, and we competed well for that grant. So that's going to move that project along. It should sail through, I think, next month when we finally bless the grant funding list at TPB. But it's really exciting to have Bellevue. I think we're the number 4 project on that list. So that's more to come. More multimodal projects are getting done with our taxpayers' money and regional and federal money as well. So that's very exciting. But yeah, I just wanted to swing by and just say goodbye. Janice is, as you know, she was a former transportation commissioner. She's going to be a great liaison for you. So yeah, that's about all.
Thank you so much, Anna. Personally, thank you for working. I'm going to give an opportunity to everyone to say a few words, but I just wanted to say that I've really enjoyed working with you, and you did a wonderful job in bringing us together, the commission we have here today. You had a significant hand in forming this body and helping us guide it. So I just want to thank you so much for your work this year, and say that. And then I'll go around the room, I'll start with you, Vice Chair. And if anyone wants to say anything, please feel free to raise your hand.
Sure. Yeah, I will echo the same comments. It was a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for all your help. Best of luck.
Commissioner King.
Yes, thank you very much, Councilwoman Robertson, of your dedication. I love your insightful comments, your critical thinking, and I'm looking forward to having you represent the Planning Commission. I think you'll be a great liaison there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. If anyone else wants to say anything, please feel free to raise your hands. But we wish you the best of luck in your next liaison commission. And now I'm going to give the floor to Council Member Zan to introduce herself and her perspective to the commissioners.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. You know, I think you're the only one left from when I first came on. Left the Transportation Commission as chair back in 5 years ago. So if I can subtract to 2017. And so I'm just very delighted to be back and, you know, thank Councilmember Robertson for serving in this role and bringing her perspective both on the PSRC Transportation Board as well as the Regional Transit Committee. So she's done a lot of work for the city in transportation, and I'm excited to step it back into the Transportation Commission and listen and learn from the commission, because I'm just excited to see the new faces and the work ahead. Ren, I read the packet and I was seeing the work that you were doing last month on the curb management plan. I remember that we were starting to look at that when I was on the commission and realizing that in downtown, I think that there was a note in there about it's similar to the shoreline of a lake. And it's absolutely true that when we look at downtown, how the curbs are managed. So I'm excited to be here with you. I think that, you know, I would like to learn more about what the commission might be interested in as we talk about transportation. And what I mean by that is, I think that now that I'm back, I have some perspectives that if you have an interest in, I can certainly share as I give the council report. I've been a member of the National League of Cities Transportation Infrastructure Committee, and we just had a subcommittee meeting today related to safety. And so some of that work is how do we position Bellevue so that we can potentially get access to the funds related to Vision Zero and safety. There's a lot of money at the federal level related to that. So a lot of the work that you're doing with the MIP and Vision Zero very much ties into that work. And then happy to report that there was a transportation package that was floated this week. And there was a public hearing this morning, and it includes funding for the 405-167 bus rapid transit project, $380 million there. And it also has funding for the two segments of East Rail. One is the steel bridge that's over I-90, and there's another segment down in, I believe it's, there's a segment up in Woodinville and one down south, and also a segment of the Mountain to Sound Greenway project. So those are really important to Bellevue, and we've got our fingers and toes crossed that we'll be able to get that transportation bill passed this year so we can actually keep those projects on track. So anyway, just an exciting time. I guess one of the questions I would have for this group is when I was on the Parks Board, what I would do is just bring information about what the council might have talked about between meetings. So what I mean by that is we had a briefing on the 405 master plan and the upcoming Main Street Bridge demo and rebuild. So if these are things that you're interested in learning about so that you can go back and take a look if you have interest, I can certainly bring that information as part of the update. So I want to make sure that whatever I'm providing as an update is meaningful to you. So as we move along, I'd love to just get that input.
Thank you, Council Member Zan. And we are here to serve the council, so your perspective is always appreciated. And welcome. We look forward to working with you along the way. And so I think Council Member Zan has opened the door for any of you to reach out to her or share your perspectives, and she would be interested in that. I hope I'm characterizing that correctly.
Absolutely.
Great. And so in the next communications, do any of the commissioners have any communications they'd like to share? I don't see any hands up. I'll give you another second in case you're trying to find it. All right. Hearing none, I'm going to continue to staff reports. Kevin?
Thank you, Chair Marciante. Just a couple things. We talked earlier just now about the curb management plan, and the project manager for that project, Chris Iverson, who you met last month, is going to bring that topic to the City Council on Monday night, on the 14th. At that council meeting, Chris will ask for direction on two topics. One is to initiate a comprehensive plan to look through the comprehensive plan and see if there's any policy amendments that might be needed to further the notion of curb management. And the other would be to seek direction from the council for the Transportation Commission to actually work on the plan, to develop the curb management plan itself in addition to policy. So stay tuned for the outcome of that council meeting on Monday night with regard to the curb management plan. And I had a couple things on my list, but I think I've checked them off. Want to make sure I have all the commissioners' photos for the Transportation Commission webpage. And I think we covered that in the pre-meeting conversation, as well as the Title VI information that Christy had been seeking. So I think I'm done with my report now. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much, Kevin. We do not have a public hearing today, so I'm going to move on and open up the study session. We have two items on our study session today. One is the Transportation Improvement Program. That's the first one. As I understand it, this first study session item is an introduction to the Transportation Improvement Program and then the process we are undertaking this year to update the Transportation Improvement Program, or the TIP. There is no action required of us today. I'm going to defer to staff on when they want to entertain clarifying questions along the way. And I don't expect we will be needing a discussion on this topic today. It is simply to prepare us for what's coming. Christy, I believe you're doing this presentation. You have the floor.
I am Welcome. Doing this presentation. Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioners. Before I get to this, I am actually missing three Commissioner Title VI responses. So Chair, Vice Chair, and Commissioner Rapune, I am needing responses for you for the annual report. And it was listed at the very bottom of your email that you would have received from Kevin on the 3rd. It is a new thing for our annual report, asking for this information for any kind of transportation advisory groups that we have, and that's what you would be. So this is new. It's the first time I've had to ask for it. Thank you for those who returned an email to me, and thank you for those who may have been confused as to what you were supposed to answer, but you did a perfect job anyway. So with that, I will move on to my topic. So again, good evening. I am here. This is my annual thing to come and meet and join with you guys to talk about the Transportation Improvement Program, which we call the TIP. So the update that we will be doing this year is for the 2023 to 2028 time period. So again, this is just a kickoff for tonight. I'm going to kind of explain what the TIP is for those of you who have not been involved in this process before. And it's just information for you tonight, and we will actually be getting into more of the list itself at the meeting in March. So a little bit of information for you, and it was in your memo. This is a mandated annual update. So this is about the same time that I come every year to be able to talk about this program plan. One of the unique things about this program plan is that it is not revenue constrained. So you have helped us work on the TFP that has revenue constraints. We know that the CIP is the budgeted plan, and it definitely has revenue constraints, but this one does not. This one allows us to put any project that we would like to have on the list if we had the resources and the staff to be able to do it in the six-year time frame. So when you actually see the complete list, it will look very long and it will have a very high dollar amount, but that is what we would wish to do if we had the money for the financial resources and staff to do those projects. Those are projects on our list. So tonight what I'm coming to you mainly for is to be able to discuss the repeal of the Comprehensive Transportation Project List, which we also call the CTPL, from the Comprehensive Plan. So this took place at the end of last year, and those projects are now being put into the TIP. So then after we go through what those changes are, I will talk to you about what the relationship is of the TIP with all of our other planning and programming processes that we have, and then kind of run through what the sections of the TIP are, because I will be bringing those to you in March, and then give you a timeline of where we're going to be at. And at any time during this presentation, if you have a question, please feel free to raise your hand. Kevin can let me know if somebody has a question as I go through this. Again, it's just information only, but I'm happy to answer any question that you may have. If I have any bumps and grinds with this section, Kevin was in charge of the CTPL, and so he will help me with it, but I think I've got it down. So the map that you see here on this slide is actually from the Comprehensive Plan, and it shows where the projects were in the CTPL. So the CTPL was originally developed in 2015. So it was a comprehensive transportation project list from all of our other long-range plans and studies that we had at that time. And they were all, they had all been vetted through and came up with the remaining 89 projects that were still on the list at that time in 2015. The Transportation Improvement Program Plan is very similar to the Comprehensive Transportation Project List with one very important difference. The TIP is much more responsive to change because, as I said before, I visit you on an annual basis. So on an annual basis, I show you things that have been completed. I show you things that have been superseded or changed in the plan, and we can remove things that are no longer valid or needed based on other work that has been done in the department. Unlike the CTPL, that was only something that we could change or modify when there were updates happening with the comprehensive plan. So moving these projects into the TIP makes a lot of sense because they'll be reviewed on an annual basis. So council then actually directed staff to prepare a recommendation to repeal the comprehensive transportation project list. Staff, meaning Kevin, then went to repeal the CTPL at the Planning Commission because the Planning Commission is the commission that oversees the comprehensive planning process. The Planning Commission held a public hearing and recommended the repeal of the CTPL to the City Council. And another thing that needed to happen was that the East Bellevue Community Council also needed to have a courtesy hearing about that. On December 13th of last year, the council repealed the comprehensive transportation project list by ordering it 6632 that was attached in your packet. Just recently, at the beginning of February, Kevin went to the East Bellevue Community Council with a public hearing, and they had an approval of Resolution 601 to concur with the repeal of the CTPL into the TIP. So where are we at right now? So this map represents those 89 projects that you just saw, but we've color-coded them to kind of show you what's going to be happening with those 89 projects. Because once we move into the TIP, you will not see them as you did in the attachment that you had in your package. They will turn into TIP projects. So on the list, we will note that there are 12 of them that are complete. So those won't actually end up on any list because they are have already been finished. We have four projects that are partially complete. One of them that you can see there is Westlake Sammamish Parkway is one of the good examples where we know that we have some sections of that that have been done, but there are other portions that are not. This project is already in the TIP, but just giving you context. There are 43 projects that will be retained, and if following on your list that you got in your packet, there was the CTPL number, the location, the description, as it was in the Comprehensive Transportation Project List. And then there were columns for TIP, TFP for Transportation Facilities Plan, and for CIP, Capital Investment Program. And depending upon which it was included in, if it only had a mark in the TIP, that means it's in our existing one right now, and it will be carried forward. If it had a mark in all three columns, then it's in the TIP. If it had one just in the transportation facilities plan in the TIP, it's in the TIP already. There are a few that didn't have a mark at all, and those will be coming forward into the TIP this year. And the descriptions for these projects will be updated to the most recent ones that we have, because again, this list was created in 2015. We have had lots of modifications and changes in lots of our projects as we've brought them forward into our program plans. So you'll see modifications that way as well. We also have 14 projects that have been superseded either by other projects or by other project descriptions that we actually know of already. And then you'll see that we have 16 projects that are being repealed. And those are the ones that show up in red on the map. You'll note that a large section is down in Factoria, and there were quite a few projects that were left over from the Factoria Area Transportation Study from a long time ago, better known as FATS. And most of them, if not all, were all related to future development concepts for Factoria Mall area. Those will be things that as that area redevelops, that will be involved in those conversations, but we won't be leading those conversations. There are other projects on the list, such as warrant studies to see if a signal might be needed. Those are also things that we take care of on an operational basis within our department and are not TIP type of projects. Then we have a series of them that will also be deferred to the Wilburton Subarea Planning Study that is coming up. So where do we go from here? So again, we start out with the comprehensive plan because we still do have long-range plans in that. And we also have our functional plans, be it the ped bike plan, the transit plan, plans such as that. As you know from the work that we have been doing for the past year and a half with you, those filter down into the transportation facilities plan as candidates or get into the plan itself. Then from the transportation facilities plan, those also go in as candidates to the capital investment program plan or the CIP, and then eventually getting the funding to actually have project implementation. So as you see, all of those arrows transfer over to the local transportation improvement program. And again, it's a non-revenue constrained program, so all of those projects can go in there. Where does it go once we've made it into the TIP? Well, we have other program initiatives that can go in there. The top where it says other program initiatives, that's where the other TIP projects will go that have not already been designated into the TFP and CIP area. And then we also have another section for other regional projects in which we would want to participate in if we had the ability to do that. From there, we take our whole transportation improvement plan and we send it off to both WSDOT to be included in the state's transportation improvement program and then also to PSRC for the regional transportation improvement program. This is one of the main mechanisms to get our projects in there, also makes them grant eligible. So when I return to you next month with a compiled plan, I will be showing you the differences between the existing 2022 to 2027 plan and the changes that are taking place with this update to 2023-2028. The project list itself will be delineated into four sections. So the first section will be color-coded on the left-hand side in yellow are projects that are in our adopted CIP. At this point in time, we do not have an updated one. So next year when I come to you at this time, we'll be doing it for the next years of the CIP. But this is for the projects that are in the adopted CIP as it is right now. The second section will be the projects that you should be very familiar with because they're going to be the projects from the preliminary 2022 to 2023 transportation facilities plan. So the projects that we have been discussing will be in that section of the TIP, except for those that are in the CIP section. And there'll be columns that will let you know where everything is at. Section three is going to have, again, these unfunded projects, like the leftover ones from the comprehensive transportation project list, any other kinds of initiatives or other analysis that we have done. We also have things in there such as our transit plan and things where we want to have more money put towards those projects. It's like a little buffer in there, and you'll note those. And then the purple section will be section 4, and those are other regional or outside agency-led projects. So when you see that list, there's going to be different projects that have to do with 405 and 520 and buses and things like that. So timeline. Here I am tonight. I'm kicking it off with you for, I don't even remember how many years I've been doing this, but Janice remembers me doing it, so it must be a long time, letting you know again how the CTPL actually fits into the TIP. And going forward, we will now only have reference to the Transportation Improvement Program. After tonight, we really have sunsetted the comprehensive transportation project list. What will be coming up next month, again, to have you review a proposed TIP list that we would like to move forward for a recommendation. And then at the next meeting also to approve a date for a public hearing. It is mandated that we have a public hearing for this plan as well to be able to get any comments or concerns from the public. So we will be having one of those as well. Right now, I have it tentatively scheduled for April 14th, which would be your first meeting in April. If when we're going through the plan next week and you feel comfortable moving forward with that, then I will ask you if you will actually approve that TIP hearing date. Once we host that public hearing, after that, we have discussion about any comments that might have been received. We go over the any kind of different plan changes that you may have recommended for us to do. And then after that, we ask that you approve that list and a recommendation to the City Council that I hope in May to be going to the City Council with for an adoption of the TIP. It is mandated that we have this process finished and the plan submitted no later than June 30th to the Washington State Department of Transportation and PSRC. So our next steps, I will return to you 1 month exactly today on March 10th. So that we can review the newly compiled proposed 2023-2028 TIP project list. I will ask that you set the mandated public hearing date at that time if you're comfortable with the results of the list. Again, tentatively scheduled for your first meeting in April. We will have a finalized proposed list after that public hearing and a recommendation to the City Council. The intention will be for council to adopt the TIP sometime in May. That will all, the dates of that will all flesh out if you approve it in April, and then have this plan submitted no later than June 30th to, again, WashDOT and PSRC. That is what I have for you this evening.
Thank you, Christy. I'm going to, Commissioner King has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Christy, for your presentation. What is the best way for us to process and give you feedback on the list? Because having gone through this, whether it's this, the TFP, as a member of JOQ Public, it's hard for us to give you productive, meaningful feedback unless we happen to know of a very specific project that we like or dislike. So if you could sort of noodle over the best way for us to approach the list, and the best way for us to give you feedback. In the past, we've talked about like maybe, and I know this doesn't apply for the TIP, but for the TFP, you know, like what was right above or below the cut line, and maybe that's the way that we can sort of give feedback. But if you could think about that and then let us know in advance if there's any way that we can be more productive in providing useful feedback, I think that would be really helpful for us.
Yes, no problem. Again, one of the biggest things for me to have you remember about this is that there really are no bounds on it because there are no financial constraints on it as you're going through the project list. One of the things that we actually do need to have is a vetted project description. So to give an example, if you think that down at the end of the street that you live on needs to have a signal, that's not a vetted enough project description for us to be able to want to put it into the TIP. So we want to have it vetted through some process, you know, as a suggestion if it fits into some of our bigger buckets, because we do have like a pedestrian and a bicycle system bucket and things like that, then we can take those into consideration as well. But this does not have any constraints as long as it's been in a through a process. And we have taken all of the projects from our recent long-range planning processes, and we have actually put them into the TIP project list.
Okay. Thank you.
Commissioner Helms?
Yeah, it's along the same lines. I was curious about whether there was a any kind of public involvement strategy other than the hearing attached to this.
That is probably the biggest thing that we do. I mean, we will send out information via Nextdoor, via Twitter, you know, our common places of allowing people to provide feedback, to look at the list itself. But again, this is one of our probably easier ones because we don't have that financial constraint. We do have a compressed timeline, though, because we have to have it in for consideration. So we don't have the kind of public involvement process that we have like when we do the TFP, or like what council has when they do the CIP, where they have the variety of public hearings and the time in between that, because we don't have that kind of time afforded to us to do it. But we do our best due diligence to have the information available on the TIP's website that we have, as well as getting information out to the public. When we do the advertising for the public hearing, we also try to put it in as many multicultural periodicals or news that we can get it into. One of the things we unfortunately run into issues with on that is the timing of when they put out their information. But we do our due diligence to try and get them into as many kind of outlets like that as possible.
Thank you.
Commissioner Rapun.
Thank you. Hey, I just had a quick question going back to the Factoria area, as I use that quite a bit. So does that mean there's no plans to do anything about the traffic down Factoria, and you're basically waiting on redevelopment to handle traffic improvements, or what? Maybe I'm just not understanding that.
The projects that were in the comprehensive transportation project list weren't necessarily about any kinds of traffic remediations. The things from the FAT study that included that, those have been done long ago. Not that conditions haven't changed down there, and we do realize that they have, but lots of them had to do with curb appeal, with crossings and things that would be up to the development to do. So there weren't any of the projects that have to do with any kind of traffic or capacity type of turning movements or anything. Those are retained on there, but the larger ones all dealt with some kinds of beautifications and things like that around the mall that would not be ours to determine.
Okay, thank you.
And Commissioner Helen, I believe your hand's still up from the last time, but I just wanted to make sure if you had anything else to share. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
That's right.
I don't see any more hands up, so I believe we're good. Thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you. I will look forward to seeing you next month.
Thanks, Christy.
You're welcome, Kevin.
All right. So we are moving to our next item in the agenda, and which is the mobility implementation plan, our grand finale. Although there's no action today, I do believe this is an important study session. This is a last opportunity to really consider the mobility implementation plan and give our final feedback. It is expected that this commission will approve and craft the transmittal to go to council during our next session. So I want to make sure that all commissioners, and thankfully we are all here today and present, so please make sure to share any feedback that you have, hopefully today or within the next few days, with staff so that they can incorporate any comments or concerns that you might have, and we can wrap this up and send over to council at our next meeting. So I think what I'm going to do is allow Kevin is gearing ready to go to do the presentation, and I'll defer to Kevin whenever you want to ask for questions or comments, but I definitely expect a robust discussion. And so I'll open up for comment, for a round of comments. I'd like to hear from, get an opportunity to hear from all commissioners. And that's what I propose we do at the end of this presentation, to make sure that everyone gets a chance to provide their thoughts of where we are today. So Kevin, you can take it away.
Well, let me start by asking, do you see my title slide?
We see your slides. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't done this before. Usually Chris does it, but I think I'm in charge today.
Yes, you are. We see all your slides. I don't know if you want to move to presentation mode so that we can see just the slide. We see the two screen display where you can see sort of the presenter display.
Okay. Let me try it a different way. I rehearsed this earlier and it worked. it seems to be sort of not working at the moment. Hang on. Okay.
Hi, Chris.
All right. How does it look now for you?
I don't see anything.
Oh. Okay, try one more time.
There we go. That looks good.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So here we are. As the chair mentioned, we're at the grand finale of the mobility implementation plan. You have had in your packet for a week a document that's about 79 pages long, I think. That is the summary of all the work that you've done over the last year on the mobility implementation plan as directed by the council. What I have for you today is a few slides just to provide the highlights of the mobility implementation plan and to maybe stimulate conversation at the end. Why don't you let me run through the presentation and we can take comments or questions at the end, okay? So let's see if I can advance this now. Did it move to the next slide?
Not yet.
Okay. I know I shouldn't be in charge of technology.
It'll be great.
Anything happening?
Nope. Click again.
Okay. One more.
Kevin, hover down in the bottom left corner and you'll see some kind of faded out arrows that will help you move.
Okay. Did it move now?
No.
Okay. my apologies. I am so not good at this.
I can give it a go, Kevin, on the PDF version you sent me. That's easier.
Okay. Well, I made some changes to it, so it won't be the correct version. So, hang on, let me try something new. Sorry about
Kevin,
that.
Kevin, are you? Is it changing on your screen?
Yes.
Can you check to see if you're giving focus on the large slide before using the arrow keys?
Okay.
Doesn't help.
How about now?
Nope. Sorry.
Good try. Okay. Let me try one more thing.
There.
Now. That works.
Okay.
Yay.
I forget what I did, but we got, I got there. Okay. So here's what I want to go through all the chapters of the mobility implementation plan and review what's coming next for this topic. Okay, did it move now?
No, that was a one-time trick, apparently.
about now? Anything?
No.
Oh, I'm so terrible. Sorry.
Enter? No? Did you try enter?
I tried enter.
There we go. Now? Yeah, but it's blank.
Now. That do so?
There we go. Yeah. It took a while. Okay. Enter. Okay. Enter works.
All right, enter. All right, so we'll start out with the goals of the mobility implementation plan that were established early on. Safety, of course, in collaboration with the Vision Zero effort to eliminate serious injuries and fatalities related to transportation system crashes. We talked a lot about equity, and we want to make sure that the projects that we design and prioritize address the equity accessibility needs of everybody in the community. The primary purpose of the transportation system is to accommodate growth. So we want to make sure that the projects that are developed through this plan support growth and accommodate multimodal transportation. And, there are growth areas of the city, but there's also a lot of access and mobility needs outside of the primary growth areas, places where people need to get to schools or shopping or parks. And that's the access and mobility, to improve connections between destinations that people want to get to. Okay, did we move? We didn't move, did we?
Yes, we did.
Are we on land use? Are we on layered network?
Yes, we are.
Oh, okay. So the layered network is a concept that the commission developed back when Councilmember Zahn was on the commission, wanting to make sure that all the different mobility plans were not just developed in silos, but that had a relationship to one another and to the land use that these projects support in an integrated system that not only builds the transportation system for each mode, but helps us to realize where there are potential compatibilities and conflicts between the different modes so that the community can make a decision about what are the priorities in terms of the projects. Okay, did we move?
Not this time. Try it again. No.
Huh, I hit the same button.
Did I enter?
Yeah, I'm hitting enter. It seems to be not cooperating now. How about now?
No. Might be slow because it took a little bit to load, but now this time it's not moving at all.
About that.
Try clicking on the application first and then hitting enter.
I'm at a loss for how to move this now. Oops. CRISPR. Oh. So Chris is trying to take control, and that would be nice.
See if I can move it along here. But you declined my request. Try that again. Oh, it might not let me.
Hang on a second. How about if I make you co-host? That won't help. Well, it's weird because my computer is not letting me click on approve. I can see it. I can see it on my screen, but it's not letting me approve you, Chris. I'm touching it and that's not working. I'm clicking on it and that's not working. Don't let me do this ever again.
This month I should be back in normal operating mode here.
Okay, let me try one more thing.
You've apparently given me control of one of your screens.
Okay, something's happening now.
Something's happening.
And I'm not doing anything. Okay, so hopefully, Are we on the layered network performance metrics?
Performance metrics, yes.
All right. I don't know how I got there, but we're there. Okay. All right. One of the chapters is on performance metrics, as you know, and the metrics describe how each mode of the system is measured. There are physical metrics, which relate to the dimension of different types of facilities, and there's functional metrics. So for the sidewalk, we've got the width of the sidewalk and the arterial crossing space between intersections and mid-block crossing locations. Bicycle metrics are in the terms of bicycle level of traffic stress. That's measured at corridors and across intersections. For transit, the metric is the travel time ratio, which means the difference in travel time between riding in a bus and riding in a car between activity centers, and the amenities for passengers at bus stops. For the vehicle metrics, it is the travel speed along the primary vehicle corridors and the volume to capacity ratio at system intersections. Those are used together. So the performance, did it move to the sidewalks or pedestrians? Okay. Whew. Okay. So for the pedestrian metrics, the dimensions of the sidewalk vary depending on the land use context that the sidewalk is in, of course, because it is intended to support the land use. So in places where there is a greater intensity and mix of land uses, the sidewalk dimensions will be greater than in locations that have a lower intensity land use. And in keeping with the access and mobility goal, pedestrian destinations and neighborhood shopping centers are really important in terms of the sidewalk dimensions and the crossing frequency, so people can get to and from the pedestrian destinations that really aren't in growth centers like the downtown or Factoria or Crossroads, but places where people need to get to on a daily basis. For the bicycle metrics, again, it's the level of traffic stress. And the commission defined level of traffic stress back in 2017 as a function of the speed and volume of the traffic on the adjacent street relative to the type of bicycle facility that is provided. So level of traffic stress 1, LTS 1, is the most comfortable type of bicycle facility, but it also requires the most separation from traffic for that bicycle facility. And the more speeds and the more volume of traffic there is, the greater separation that's required. And one of the things that's important to know is that the intersections also need to be addressed, because sometimes those are locations that are a missing link in a otherwise comfortable bicycle corridor. If you've got a stressful intersection that's difficult to get across as a bicycle, then you don't have a complete bicycle network. So it's important to provide for the intersection improvements as well. The transit metrics are the travel time ratio, again, between the activity centers being less than 2 times as long as it would take to drive, and also the amenities at bus stops. And not every bus stop is created equal, and several different types of bus stops would have several different types of amenities for the passengers that would use them. The vehicle performance metrics are the corridor travel speed on the primary vehicle corridors. The commission described those during the summer. And the volume to capacity ratio is described at system intersections. So the map shows those primary vehicle corridors and the system intersections along those. We spent some time looking at performance management areas, trying to consolidate the 14 mobility management areas that had existed into more manageable and relatable performance management areas to the land use context. So there's the type 1 PMA, which is downtown Belred and Wilburton, which is the highest density mixed use neighborhoods, and also the most robust mobility options that are available. The type 2 PMAs of Crossroads, Eastgate, and Factoria are a little bit less dense and have less robust mobility options, but still you can get into and between those areas with all the different modes. And the type 3 PMA are largely residential, although there is supportive land uses related to retail and services within that larger green area of the rest of the city. So the performance targets then are the experience, how the user experiences the transportation mode or transportation system with each mode. And it's really not on a scale. The performance targets are really on a toggle. When you monitor the performance of the system relative to those metrics that we just looked at, the system either meets the target or does not meet the target. And if a location within a mode does not meet the target, then that may be a place to look as a candidate location for project investment. Just because it doesn't meet a target doesn't prescribe a specific type of project or a performance outcome. It tells you where to look. And then the project identification and prioritization process will take a look at those locations that do not meet the target and develop project candidates that can inform the future transportation improvement program and the transportation facilities plan. So this slide just consolidates the performance targets for each mode. This is in the mobility implementation plan. It is a summary. And just to respond to one of the comments we heard during public comment, yes, the vehicle performance target related to volume to capacity ratio did change from the prior concurrency system. Right now it's a target and it's not a standard. But as was noted, there were some small changes to the volume to capacity ratio performance target at system intersections, and that those small changes were two decimal places to the right of the decimal. So there were small changes, but it consolidated all of the intersections in each PMA to a single volume to capacity ratio rather than having several different targets in each PMA. And one of the ways that works is that it's combined, that the vehicle metric is combined with the urban travel speed metric, so that the intersections perform both in a volume to capacity ratio function, but also in a travel speed function, which is really how most people experience their drive along a corridor. They don't experience the volume to capacity ratio as much as they experience the travel speed. So this is an example. We wanted to display and summarize the performance targets for all of the modes. It's done in several different ways in the mobility implementation plan. And this is an example just from the pedestrian mode. There's a map. And the map shows three different color codes. One color code is where the sidewalk meets the performance target. The blue corridors are where it meets the target, but only on one side of the street. And the yellow is places where there's the sidewalk is missing. That data is rolled up into two tables. One is a citywide table, which I show you at the top. Shows the total miles of sidewalk in each category of performance and the proportion of the total system in that category. To further define the reporting, the performance targets are separated by the three performance management areas. And you can see that on the slide. One thing we did was try to test this program out into the future to see if it would be forward compatible as we go and look to a forecast and not just existing conditions. So for the assumptions that we used to do this analysis were the land use growth protection projections for the city from the Puget Sound Regional Council for the base year is 2019 and the target year is 2044. And that is an increase of 80,000 jobs in that time period and 35,000 dwelling units, most of which are allocated to the type 1 PMA because those are the growth areas. So that initial land use distribution may change because the Wilburton commercial area may change the zoning capacity in that area, and the comprehensive plan may also affect how land use is distributed around the city. But the total number of jobs and dwelling units would remain the same. The baseline for the transportation analysis would be the projects in the preliminary 2033 transportation facilities plan. But it is preliminary. The final set of projects may, or the final TFP may have a different set of projects. And we're also, you know, refining the evaluation tools. So in the end, the maps and the summary analysis may change a little bit from what is shown in your mobility implementation plan document. But just as an example, this is the 2044 projection for the pedestrian mode. And you can see the map. If we had the map side by side, you would see some of the blue and the yellow sections of sidewalk turn green because the project's built the complete sidewalk network along that arterial corridor. And you can see that the results are summarized citywide and then also by performance management area. Here's a side-by-side comparison for the vehicle mode, looking at the intersection volume to capacity ratio. On the left, figure 19 is the existing volume capacity ratio. Green meets the target. The amber color does not meet the target. Moving forward, as you might expect, with more land use, the volume to capacity ratio on some intersections changes from green meeting the target to amber not meeting the target. And again, doesn't indicate a failure of the system. It indicates the location of a place to look to see what, if any, project you can do to address the performance target that is not met. And you know, as you can see from the vehicle map, a lot of performance targets are not met at some system intersections. So what is the process for making decisions to address those performance target gaps? So first of all, the first step is to identify all the performance target gaps and to make sure that we are identifying them for each mode. Now we have the tools now to do that. And then we would look at all those performance target gaps and provide the first level of screening. Could a project concept that addresses that gap meet with the MIP goals, safety, growth, access and mobility and equity? If it does, then it can move on to the next stage with public engagement, helping to refine and prioritize project concepts that can be further developed. And through public engagement that will undoubtedly involve the Transportation Commission as well, the first screening can be a list of project concepts that become candidates for the Transportation Improvement Program. And then as a final offering of the MIP, projects can be prioritized that can be then candidates for the financially constrained transportation facilities plan. And finally, as has been noted, the concurrency program has changed from a vehicle-only concurrency standard to a multimodal concurrency standard. With the primary change being that there are no specific performance standards for any specific mode, but the final calculation is that there is a supply of transportation projects that is greater than equal to the demand of those transportation facilities projects. And the final list of projects is informed by the transportation facilities plan, and supply is created when the projects are fully funded through the CIP. And this final slide is just a graphic that shows the relationship between supply and demand, that supply is provided by all modes of transportation, and demand is really created by all the different types of land use approvals that are done in the city. But then the bottom line is that you have to have enough supply to meet the demand from transportation or demand from land use. So as we go forward towards the council, the next meeting on March 10th, the Transportation Commission will be asked to approve the mobility implementation plan and to transmit that mobility implementation plan to the City Council with a letter. I included a draft letter in your packet. I've been informed that the draft letter is too long, so I'm trying to work on streamlining that letter so it is more concise. And then on April 4th at the City Council, the Commission will transmit the MIP to the Council members, and the staff will ask the Council to direct the next steps in the process will be to develop the multimodal concurrency code. The Transportation Commission will make a recommendation to the Council on the concurrency code amendments. And also we're looking at a concurrency MIP implementation guide that the Commission will work on and provide a recommendation to the Director. And that's my summary of your good work on the mobility implementation plan. Sorry for the technical difficulties. I'll make sure Chris runs the show from now on. So thank you, and happy to respond to comments and questions.
It seems like we have one question from Commissioner Helen.
Yeah, I wasn't around when we did the bicycle level of traffic stress matrix. Could we go back to that slide? Is that might be asking too
much. Hang on, let me.
That's okay.
Yeah. I think I stopped sharing. Let me try to share again.
Because my general question is how the color chart was compiled. Yeah, there you are.
Okay. I'm not sure if it shows correctly, but I'm not going to mess with it.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Okay.
So the color chart.
Thank you.
The commission back in 2016 and 2017 worked up this color chart. It is a very basic summary of what was then, you know, best practices work that was very, very complicated. The reason for the level of traffic stress is a function of many, many things. And the Transportation Commission at that time wanted to focus on the fundamental things that related to the comfort and safety of a bicycle rider. There are things in practice related to pavement quality, the quantity of trucks, the slope of the hills, et cetera. The commission didn't want to create a program that was so complicated as to be unmanageable, so focused on the two primary factors that affected bicycle rider level of comfort, and that's the speed and volume of the traffic. And recognizing that there were a number of different types of bicycle facilities out there, the commission correlated the type of bicycle facility with the speed and volume of traffic to develop this chart that showed what the resulting level of traffic stress would be if you had this type of facility adjacent to the speed and volume of traffic. So that's how the chart came about.
And so you said best practices. So is that like peer reviewed literature kind of thing, or how are best practices established?
There is a lot of peer reviewed literature out there, and there are 100 factors that can go into the level of traffic stress calculation. And the commission at the time was apprised of maybe a dozen of those factors and chose the speed and volume of traffic to be the ones to focus on.
Kevin, I can briefly weigh in on that. San Jose State has an institute called the Mineta Transportation Institute. these national transportation research bodies, the fundamentals of what Kevin was just talking about, if you were to look at the Mineta Institute work, you'll see that they were the first to craft this basic idea, again, with this a little bit of this simplification. And the Transportation Commission looked at that along with parallel work that WSDOT was doing at the same time, that also pivoted from the Mineta Transportation Institute work, and essentially created a version that's what we see here, which is adapted to the conditions in Bellevue. Bellevue's conditions are wanted to be a little bit more nuanced than either WSDOT or the national research. So those are the two primary pieces of, and both had gone through a number of peer reviews to get to this.
Thanks.
Commissioner King?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So first, some just clarifying questions. What is the definition of lower density when you talk about the residential areas? I'm trying to understand if you can go back to that slide where it mentions lower density and the PMA types. Yeah, right here.
Sure. Okay. Well, the definition within the green area are residential densities with zoning that range from R1, which is one unit per acre, and that would be up in the Bridal Trails area, to R30, which is 30 units an acre. And that land use type is more the small 5-over-1 or five-story condos, apartment buildings, et cetera, that you might find in along Bellevue Way or along Northeast 8, for instance.
Okay, that makes sense. So I guess my question is, does the PSRC estimates in terms of growth in these areas take into account current conditions of land use code? And if we see an increase in density, you know, say doubling or tripling of density in these residential areas, will that impact the MIP plans? Mm-hmm. Because there are, you know, there's movement afoot at the state level. And I just want to make sure that if we create a plan, it's not going to be immediately invalidated by an increase in density in our residential areas, which would throw off our calculations.
Well, one thing to know is that the numbers that I provided to you as a 2044 forecast are independent of state zoning preferences or even Bellevue's preferences for zoning. The 80,000 jobs and the 35,000 housing units are Bellevue's assignment between 2019 and 2044. And it's up to Bellevue to determine where that land use goes.
Why don't we take that offline then? Because I think there's a longer discussion around things that may be outside Bellevue's control.
Commissioners and Council members and wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, I did, because on Monday when we were presented with at the council the King County countywide planning policies for ratification, I think that Commissioner Ting, this is probably what you're talking about, is that as part of our multi-years of working on the Growth Management Policy Board, the City of Bellevue is ratifying the King County plan that shows that between now and 2044, we're going to accept 35,000 more housing and or population and 70,000 more jobs. And if there is a table that was published in Monday's packet or presentation that shows that the current land use for housing is only has the capacity of 26,859. So the current zoning will not satisfy the 35,000 that we have accepted as part of our growth targets for 2044. And at the same time, for jobs, our current zoning is showing that we will surpass 70,000 jobs if there are employers that come to Bellevue, if they use our current land use code and zoning, The table shows a capacity of 117,241 jobs. So the current zoning is actually has more imbalance between jobs and housing, which I think, as you probably can imagine, exacerbates the transportation in our city, because if we have that many more people that work here but can't live here, that they are either taking advantage of our multimodal transit, ped, bike, or driving as a single occupant or in a carpool. So I think those are pieces that we need to make sure that we are talking about. But I think that it is actually more about a commitment the city's already made as part of our growth management discussions at the county level, and not so much anything related to a state imposition of zoning. In order for us to meet these targets that we're committing to, that's going to be ratified very soon, we have to look at our zoning to figure out where all that housing is going to go. So I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you. That's a fair statement. Nothing has been passed at the state level. But as I mentioned, I thank you for your comment. And I think, Kevin, maybe we can talk offline. I just want to make sure the MIP somehow captures this so that we plan for any changes we know that are coming down the pike.
Right. And I think it will, because we'll be monitoring the performance of all modes, and that will reflect changes that occurred in land use.
And I just wanted to add, changes in land use are processed through the city just like we are. It goes through the Planning Commission and City Council. So it's not something that would be out of step with the role of council and what they do. So and it would require a public process to adjust the zoning at any time, just like the Planning Commission does. So it's just my sense that would that come to pass through a very public process, then this would need to be adopted at that time. We can't usually preempt that. We wouldn't be able to preempt what the Planning Commission or Council is going to do, or try to assume that we know what the outcome of where those additional housing was going to go. And as the Transportation Commission, I don't want to get into ahead of the Planning Commission or Council in that respect. Commissioner Ding?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so I assume you're looking for generalized feedback on the MIP at this point?
Can you see if there's any other clarifying questions from anyone before we start a round of comments? Yep, go ahead, Commissioner Ding.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So my feedback, one thing that I'd like to see us focus on in the MIP is how we increase the non-vehicular facility usage. This is a point that I brought up in the past, which relates to we're building a set of facilities, and I think it's really important that those facilities get used, because, you know, you can build a great facility, but if it's not actually being used, then it's really not providing any benefit to the Bellevue residents. And so I love the idea of having a multimodal level of service, because I agree it's unsustainable for us to focus on single occupancy vehicles. But the thing that I find missing is looking at how we prioritize projects and ensure that they will build facilities that are being used. So there needs to be some calculation in our prioritization about, hey, we're building a facility, let's say a new bike lane, a new pedestrian, investing in bus facilities. We need to make sure that those facilities are actually going to be used, and we need to have a way to give feedback or, you know, complete the cycle so that other components of the city, whether it's the Planning Commission, Council, et cetera, understand that these facilities are being built, but there's another part of the equation in order to ensure that they are actually used at at the appropriate level. So I think that's probably my biggest piece of feedback. Page 53, step 2 of the MIP, we should think about the number of users that are actually going to use the facility or the project that we're building. Because, like I said, you have to have facilities that are being used. Otherwise, the actual benefit, the extra capacity that we create, really doesn't have any benefit. And I, for example, like, should we think about how TDM, as mentioned earlier in public testimony, you know, does that somehow play into the MIP, which then increases the usage of the facilities that we're building? I don't know if that's out of scope for the MIP, but that struck me as a really interesting idea. So that would probably be my first biggest piece of feedback, is we have to make sure that the facilities that we use, that we build, are being used. The second piece is, in terms of the equity categories, I think we should look and see, how do we tailor those to Bellevue? So we have a set of categories, and those categories probably work well across the U.S., but if we look at Bellevue specifically, do those categories actually address the historical equity issues that we've had in the past? And if they don't, then we're sort of shortchanging where we're spending our equity dollars. So, for example, I know that for things like people that have, for households with no vehicles, I believe we had a discussion earlier where in Seattle, that could be a lifestyle choice. And while that's an admirable choice, if it's a lifestyle choice, it's not necessarily an equity issue. And I think the focus should instead be on low income, or, you know, disabilities or single parents, rather than people that choose to not have a vehicle. So my suggestion would be looking at that table and maybe coming up with another column that describes how those equity categories actually how they're actually relevant to Bellevue specifically, to the people that live here in Bellevue. As I mentioned before, we are majority-minority, so there might be some differences in how we look at equity, and I think that lens or that extra column is really important. I'm going to stop here to see if other people have feedback, because I've got a list, but I want to make sure I don't monopolize the time. So, Madam Chair, I guess I'll stop here and see if anyone else has feedback.
Sounds good. And what we can do is go through a round of 3 minutes each. And I don't have a timer. Maybe Kevin can help me with a timer.
Yeah. But
let's do a round of 3 minutes each and see who else might have a comments. Commissioner Ting, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. My third point would be the public tool that the BDA board member had mentioned earlier. That struck me as a really great idea. I love the idea of having open data so that people can access to see, you know, what is the state of the project, what are the metrics, and making sure everything is up to date, because, you know, as we've seen, there's some data that's out there with regards to bike facility usage. And I think that would be really helpful in figuring out, well, you know, are we putting the high priority bike paths in the right place? Should we move things around? And having that data available not only to the commissioners, but also available to the public, I think would be really useful. My fourth piece of comment is that the concurrency plan that's in the MIP is somewhat vague. I really would like to see how supply is calculated, because demand is fairly clear, that's person trips. But we never actually saw the spreadsheet of how is concurrency mobility unit supply created. And there's some magic formula that I think was in one of the spreadsheets. But, you know, it's not clear exactly how that actually works, because, you know, if you have supply in one capacity, and it's based on the width of a sidewalk, how does that actually impact the actual transportation demand that's being created by a new business or a new development. So these are some pieces of feedback. I'd love to, you know, hear some ideas on how we can get them addressed, and also hear what the other commissioners think about some of the things that I've mentioned.
Thank you, Commissioner Ting. Commissioner Helen, you have 3 minutes, and Kevin, I hope you've got the timer.
Well, I certainly won't take 3 minutes, because I just wanted to say that I'll have some written comments that I'll send to Kevin. But I did have a general comment on public involvement, because it touches on several of the things that we've talked about, things that Commissioner Tang especially brought up. And I don't know if there's been consideration of improving the public involvement process, because, you know, just having a single hearing that brings a few people that are focused on this particular subject already brings them to the meetings, but it doesn't, it lacks outreach, I think, and that's something that I think that we should consider. And yeah, I'll put the rest of my comments in writing. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Helland. I'd like to give an opportunity, Kevin, to really to walk through. I think you're just saying the public hearing, that's for us for the Transportation Improvement Program. The actual outreach for the Mobility Implementation Plan has taken us the whole year, most of the meetings. And Kevin, if you can go walk through what opportunities for public engagement were available for Mobility Implementation Plan, if you, I don't know if you recall them. I probably recall them better than I did. Just to clarify what has been done today.
Well, one of the most significant parts of the public involvement for the MIP, in addition to all the study sessions that the commission did, was a community questionnaire that we put out in the summer. I think we put it out in July, and it stayed active through the month. We had over 500 people respond to that, and the feedback from that has been incorporated into the work that the commission did on the mobility implementation plan. In addition to that, we were invited to the Bellevue Downtown Association, the Bellevue Chamber of Commerce, the Eastside Transportation Association, these groups that follow the work of the Transportation Commission and wanted to dive deep and look under the hood about what the work that the commission was doing on this mobility implementation plan. So we did that. The vice chair and the chair and I attended and addressed people's questions at these meetings. People have responded in writing and in oral communications at almost every commission meeting. So there's been a lot of public input into this mobility implementation plan in response to requests for input from the staff and from the commission. One of the things that the BDA mentioned in their comments earlier was about sort of reporting and monitoring. And Commissioner Ting just talked about it now. But what kind of monitoring and reporting tool are we going to use to make sure that the community is aware of the current state of mobility for each of the modes? I timed myself out. So for each of the modes, we would have a performance dashboard of some sort to be created, but the commission was introduced to the notion of performance dashboards early on in the process. And we committed as staff to developing this after the MIP was created so that we'd have a mechanism to gather data and report out in a transparent way to the community what the results of that data gathering was.
I'm going to ask the other commissioners to weigh in and just go down the list. Commissioner Beeson, could you share your perspective at this point?
Certainly. Thank you. One of the things I'd like to say is, we just need to keep in mind that we're here to represent the community as a whole. So that's very important. It's made up of all kinds of people and all kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of needs, and I want to make sure we keep that first and foremost. I tend to agree with Commissioner Ting on the fact that I would like to see the performance dashboard or measurements. I think that's critical. I think that's critical to get the buy-in of the community and to be able to continue to monitor and modify things as the community changes. We all know that there's large changes coming, and I think this is our way to figure out, as mentioned prior, are we making the right choices? Are we spending the money where we need to? Are we getting the return on our investments? And do different needs come during different times of the year? I mean, when school's in session or when it's the summers, there is a change in the flow of traffic through the city. Another thing that I wanted to discuss is I do also have a concern about how the supply is calculated. I think that just continues to come up over and over again, and I can't quite get my arms around that, as well as clearly defining the level of service. I think we might want to revisit that and make sure that that's clarified as far as what we've put together in the past, and that it's easily read and people understand what the expectation is as the overall community when they use any mode of transportation. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Beeson. Commissioner Kurt?
Uh,
Yeah, so let's see. I like how the documents turned out. I like how the intro has been improved. I think I talked about that last time, and I think that you know, because a lot of people are only going to read the executive summary, and I think it starts out doing a good job of explaining, you know, why this document was created in the first place. Let's see. I also agree with, I guess, Commissioner Beasens and the last comment about the supply calculation. I think that came before, or I don't remember as much discussion about that. Maybe some of it was before my time. So I think that would be interesting to see. I also think the comments about that we've heard about demand management are, you know, I don't think that's, you know, it's obviously not an issue for this document, but I think that it's, you know, we had a good briefing on it. So, but I think some of the numbers that Councilmember Zahn just shared, you know, just really emphasize how important this is going to be to solving future problems. So I would like to see, you know, if there's other things the commission can do to work harder on that issue. And I think that's actually even more important than, you know, trying to measure and predict, you know, usage of things like bicycles and pedestrian trips. I think that, I think it's very hard to, you know, build based on what, we think people are going to use. I think we have to kind of, unfortunately, we have to build it and hope that they come. But I think that's how it is with all our modes of travel. If you build more roads, you get more traffic. But if you build more bike paths, you eventually should get more, bike trips. So those are the thoughts I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner Kurtz. Vice Chair?
Thanks. Two comments, really. The first one is just a thank you, and I think it's very fun to see just all of our work kind of come together in one document. And I do feel like we've set ourselves up in a good place to address what's been my overarching concern about just transportation in Bellevue as a general rule. We know we're poised for a lot of growth, and none of us want to set ourselves up for the creation of pain points or too much traffic stress out there for bicyclists or too much backdrops or, you know, holdups for the buses, et cetera. So relating to that and focusing back on what people were talking before about performance metrics and all that, I think we just need to be very honest with ourselves and quite honestly have the guts that when our data shows us that there's an issue, that we know that we have to address it. And there's nothing wrong with issues being identified, but just because they're there to, those metrics are there to point us to them, but that we recognize that as a pain point and something that we do need to address. I mean, we did all this hard work to get us to the point that it would show us how we're doing. And I think we just need to be very transparent that, hey, here is an issue. This one's not working so great. These other eight areas are working great. Let's focus in on this one and see what we can do to improve it. So I think it's just making sure that we keep that top of mind. Thank you.
Commissioner Ripon.
Thank you. You know, I would probably echo a little bit of the concern that Commissioner Ting has, and that part of that is I would be a little concerned about the if we build it, they will come kind of mentality. And specifically, I would be concerned a little bit on the bike lanes, because that's kind of going head to head with cars directly. I fully agree that having a complete bike system, whereas if I want to get from A to B, there's a bike route that will take me there with a lane. But I think when we're talking about building out, you know, larger lanes or larger bike lanes in different areas, you know, you're taking away roadway there. And if the demand is not there and they're not getting used, then that would concern me a little bit. I don't know if there's a way to build a complete, you know, bike system, and then if there's, you know, more demand as it gets built, then you can make it larger. Anyway, that's just off the top of my head. And the other concern I had was living in Eastgate, I'm a little concerned that 50% of the sidewalk gaps are in Eastgate. So come on, let's get some sidewalks.
What if you don't use them, Commissioner Rapoon? Sorry, I'm just, I was a zinger, not official, off the record. Council members, Anne, did you want to share something with us?
You know, I do, because I was on the commission when we came up with that, the level of stress map. And I would say that I would tell people I was in the yet interested yet concerned category. And when I think about the work we've been doing with neighborhood congestion and safety with the levy, the commitment to Vision Zero, a lot of what we're doing is what I heard just now about the making sure that we're truly creating a connected network. Because my sense is that it isn't so much the, if you build it, they will come. It's more of a, if we create the kind of connected and protected pathways so that people are not actually more at risk when they're biking or walking from being hit by cars and dying, then we're more likely to see people that will be willing to be out on our bike and ped paths. I believe, Kevin, that our data shows that in the last couple of years, we've had more fatalities with pedestrians being hit by cars and also several bicyclists. So I think that is one of the things for the commission to consider, is when we look at the whole bike and ped connections, what does it look like? And one of my questions, because when it came to the commission or the council, it was one of my questions is, can we get a map that shows the full bike connected pathways and where the gaps are? So the comment about living in Eastgate and how many, you know, sidewalks are not continuous and, you know, bike paths that aren't continuous. I remember the bicyclist that was pushed off the road on Newport Way. And now we finally have a path that it would be interesting to see, now that we have a much safer pathway there, what we see in terms of usage. So I thought that might be helpful for the group, because this was something that was worked on while I was on the Transportation Commission. Anyway, and then I don't know about the map, whether, Kevin, that one's been generated now so that we can see what it looks like.
I forget what page it's on, but in the MIP, there is a map of the bicycle network with a highlight of the priority bicycle corridors as a subset of the entire bicycle network. And in the performance targets chapter, every length of that bicycle network and the priority bicycle corridors was characterized as to meeting the performance target or not meeting the performance target. So we have identified where the gaps exist already. And the nice thing about the MIP, and I mentioned this in my presentation, is it doesn't tell you what to do. It tells you where to look. And Janice, I think you mentioned this, and also Vice Chair Stash, the performance target gaps, which we identify through monitoring and measuring, are the universe of places where the performance target doesn't meet the expectation. So this is where to look. And then through a process of screening through the mobility implementation plan goals and public engagement, looking at what the community really wants to have built. We narrow that universe of projects down to project concepts that can be added to the transportation facilities plan. So there's a transparent public process built into the MIP that doesn't prescribe an outcome, but it engages the community in looking at the places where the performance targets aren't being met, and we ask them directly, what should we do about that? In some cases, it might be nothing because there's environmental constraints, there's existing land uses that might be in the way. It might be too expensive to undertake at this time. There may be a number of reasons why a project couldn't advance through the process, but there's also a number of reasons why a project would want to advance through the process, and that's where the community involvement process informs the outcome.
And then I think as I heard all commissioners speak, it struck me that what we were having was a debate as if we were prioritizing projects, which no projects are in front of us today. And the MIP, as you say, talks about that prioritization and nods towards that prioritization, but doesn't prescribe it. And I wonder if it would be helpful to include that there might be disagreement during prioritization upon the types of projects and which performance targets to prioritize and advance and which projects, and that would be resolved through the process of public engagement, discussions with the commission, because the type of discussion, shall we prioritize utilization or shall we build it if we come, let's say, there are perhaps two perspectives. And as Commissioner Beeson mentioned, we represent all perspectives. This commission should represent all perspectives. And rather than try to deliberate here what is most important, it is during that process of prioritization upon which the commission would be engaged where we deliberate specific projects and specific concepts that come to our attention through this process. And it might be helpful to recognize that outright, that in the prioritization process, there might be opposing perspectives that will be deliberated about and what is most important in a given year or in a given cycle, I should say. So I just thought that might be a helpful clarification that would happen, that debate would happen at every cycle. Commissioner Ting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the process, the two things that I guess I would really emphasize, the first being the number of users that benefit from the built facility. This is the return on investment that I was talking about earlier. I know we're not talking about specific projects, but I think that should be part of the process. That should be part of the conversation that we look at when we talk about how we want to prioritize. The other thing that I know is not in here, maybe by design, is the environmental aspect, and maybe that's in the environmental stewardship program, but I was a little disappointed to see that environmental sustainability was not one of the goals, and I think I mentioned this in one of the previous meetings, but if that's actually just covered in a separate section, I understand that makes sense. And the last thing I wanted to mention is that in response to Ms. Wanamaker's question about the VOC of going from 0.85 to 0.80, first off, this is not a level of standard conversation. This is not a concurrency conversation. So there isn't a hard and fast action that we take, right? These are all guidance and metrics that we look at and make thoughtful conversations about. I do realize that there were some areas that were 0.80 and there were some areas that were 0.85, and now we're moving all of them to 0.85. So we sort of have to pick one of those numbers. I thought it'd be interesting for the commission to hear the definition of those numbers. So if you look at both of them imply or state efficient traffic operation, but the 0.80 is some delays and an acceptable level of driver comfort, whereas a 0.85, which is the degraded standard, is some driver frustration. So personally, I would stick with 0.80 because I think that is where we want to take people, right? We want to say there are some delays, but it's an acceptable level of driver comfort. And moving to 0.85, we're basically saying, hey, the standard is we want some driver frustration. Having said all that, if the metrics of the dashboard or the website allows you to look at the areas that are 0.80 and the areas that are 0.85, maybe it's sufficient to basically let either the commission or the public pick and choose which one they want to look at so they can then see which intersections are in good shape and which are in bad shape. So, like I said, I think 0.80 makes more sense, but as long as people can filter and look at both of them, then maybe it's okay.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for you, Kevin. You mentioned the performance dashboard. Is there any ETA on that? Do we have any idea where we are in that? Is that going to be something that's going to be made public? Can you just speak to that just a little bit more for me?
Well, Chris and I introduced the dashboard to the commission, you know, back early in the process, and many commissioners weren't involved early in the process. We, as a follow-on to this mobility implementation plan, as I mentioned, the council will provide direction on April 8th, and part of that direction will be to develop a mobility implementation plan / transportation concurrency guidance document. And within that process, which the council will provide direction on, we will develop the performance monitoring tools and the dashboard to report. So it's coming up in later in this year, maybe into the early 2023, but we'll take council's direction on that.
I had a my own personal recollection. I was trying to think about the volume to capacity discussion, which I think we've done round and round a couple of times. And my recollection was that at the end of it, we decided, you know, it is a tool, it is a guidance, a number. And knowing, if you can go to that VOC map that you have, knowing that there's so many intersections that are going to be degraded, the actual conditions are going to be degraded. And this is a guide of telling us where to look, what is the most critical intersection that we should address. And so what we're trying to find is which intersections we need to address. So 0.85, which is which, as you described, the vehicle frustration, that's where we want to look, where frustration starts to occur. If you put it down to 0.8, then it's okay, essentially, right? The 0.8, we wouldn't prioritize that intersection or project there. And so I think we ended up, and I know it's not intuitive to the public, but we ended up choosing the higher standard to help us understand which were the worst locations. Not to say that that was the place that was okay, but actually to point that that's where the problems start and that's what we want to look at. That was my recollection about it. I know we went back and forth and the numbers weren't exactly what we meant, but we wanted to have a tool that showed us what was the worst case scenarios and can help us narrow down the things that we needed to work on. So that's what I recall. Commissioner Ting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, that's a very fair point. I understand where you're coming from because we do want to look at hotspots. So maybe what we could do is, if without trying to do feature creep here, if we could actually have a way of kind of scaling up and down, whether it's a heat map or something like that. So instead of something being completely green or completely yellow, you sort of know where it is on the spectrum so that when you analyze where do we want to invest our dollars, you can sort of, you know, look at the heat map or change a slider so that, you know, of these three yellow regions, this is the most yellow that we should focus on.
That's all good feedback for when you come back to us, Kevin, with prioritization approach. Where to look.
I recall from, you know, earlier commission discussions, and I may get pushback on this, but we didn't want to create a system that was so complex as to be unmanageable. That's why we went to a toggle. It meets the criteria or meets the performance target or it doesn't meet the performance target. When we focus on the places that don't meet the performance target, then we can see what the level of performance is relative to the target. But to try to communicate levels of performance with different shades of yellow or different qualitative representations of the performance becomes administratively complex to do, and the commission didn't want to go down that road.
And I might be misunderstanding, but I'm taking most of Commissioner Ting's comments as guidance for prioritization rather than actual changes to this, but clarifications in the prioritization process of what we would look at and how we would look at it. So even though that standard, that gap is 0.85, once you come to us to help, and you know, now we've looked here, but here's the degrees of maybe this is, we're choosing this one because it's going to be the worst one, or but you know, Commissioner Ting, if I'm misunderstanding, please feel free to clarify. But I understand, as I've taken the context of most of your comments today as leaning into the prioritization process and how that's actually going to look like and what we're actually going to do eventually.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. I just want us to be able to get the additional data to help with prioritization.
Yeah, and that data does exist even now. If you go to volume 2 in the materials that you sent, every intersection has a V over C metric associated with it. So you can compare that precise metric with the performance target, and you can see how much gap there is.
Commissioner Helen?
I was just going to suggest that, you know, if you're looking at a particular VC ratio as a predictive tool, that's one thing. If you're looking at it from a performance standard of, you know, where we are at now, that's a different thing. And putting, you know, putting a GIS-based map together that uses different cutoffs is not terribly complex. Like you said, the data already exists. I'm not saying that it's something that you take to public meetings to try and explain, because it could get pretty thick pretty quick. But it would be could be useful information to have, at least at the commission level.
Commissioner Beeson?
Yeah, Kevin and Chris, I just wanted to get your feedback on how better we can clarify the supply calculation and the level of service that keeps being brought up.
Chris, you want to go?
Yeah, so I can, I just flipped here. I'm just going to kind of read a little bit of what's in the report to try to clarify what it is. It's unfortunately a complicated little bit of math that has to be done to do this, but I can try to boil it down. And this is on page 66 of the document. So the supply, which is what the demand, I think most people are clear with, that's the number of person trips. What is the supply? The supply comes from the total number of amount of supply comes from the forecast amount of transportation funding that the city is expected to be programming towards transportation investments over a 20-year span. That funding amount is actually partially influenced by growth. Growth generates impact fees. Growth generates revenue for transportation. So you could think of it as a little bit of circular logic, but it's not, because the growth is, as has been noted before, handed to the city of Bellevue by the regional agencies. So how much growth there is helps to define how much transportation investment there is, but the city has other funding tools and resources. So you combine those together. So you say, we have, I'm just making up a number, $250 million of transportation investment that we are expecting to invest over the next 20 years. That's your supply in terms of gross dollars. The magic formula or whatever Commissioner Ting had called it, what it does is it takes the number of person trips and it equates that to the amount of investment that's expected. So we can essentially get a investment per person trip so that we know, are we building enough? Are we actually investing the amount that we forecasted at a rate that's concurrent with growth in the city. That's concurrency. That's that supply has to be greater than or equal to demand. What you actually build, what you're implementing gets to the most recent conversation and is not stipulated by the MIP. That is that deliberation that the chair had noted of which projects warrant investment in a given TFP and CIP cycle. You all get to have some influence in that by looking at the current data, the forecasts as you see them at the time. That is what gets in. So you could say, well, we're really kind of behind on managing traffic congestion, or we're really far behind on building out sidewalks in Eastgate. That's the decision that's made at the time. All of those help to advance concurrency to support the growth in the city, but you're going to be looking at the data at the time to actually what we call in the document, make available that supply. You actually have to put the money on the table, if you will, to make that supply available. So just real quick, in summary, the supply is how much money is it forecasted to be invested in transportation over a 20-year period. That's what the pool, we call it, of potential supply is. You can choose to make that supply available by programming the dollars out or laying them on the table, actually get them there, such that you can't just say, oh, we plan to do this and never invest the money. That doesn't count because you're not doing anything to add capacity. You actually have to be investing to add the capacity. So we're trying not to be opaque about supply. It's just that there's a few steps that get into it, and there's a sort of an implicit feedback loop there that if after all the investment over a few cycles, you still say, man, the performance target gaps, we're just not covering those quickly enough. That gets a little bit out of sort of the Transportation Commission's purview, because it gets into, well, how much transportation funding is available? That's a city council question. But we're pretty clear about that. That's the point of the document, is to really just say, we've invested a lot. We still have a lot of gaps. And even through a lot of investment, we're still not making the progress that we as the commission would like. That gets into a bigger question that we didn't put in this document because it's not a Transportation Commission sort of topic per se, but it's a broader thing that we've talked about these before, that there's these larger scale city council issues that this helps to daylight and have a robust discussion within the community.
Thank you, Chris. And I shall add, this jogged my memory when we went to present the transportation facilities plan. So to me, just to clarify, Chris, that 20-year span, we're talking about the capital improvement program and the transportation facilities plan would amount to that 20 years. Is that correct?
It's even more than that. Okay. It's beyond what we currently forecast in the TFP, and it's what we're trying to do is match the growth. We need to match the growth target, the land use growth target, mm-hmm. with the transportation investment forecast at that time. So it's outside of the CIP plus TFP.
Plus TFP plus a little bit more. Okay, and so what I wanted to share was that was actually the conversation, the feedback, or the comments that council was talking about, because we did the presentation of the TFP, and we couldn't help ourselves to show them a preview of what the MIP process will look like in the future. It was clear to state that was not the prioritization process we had used for this TFP in particular, but that now we had tools to have a prioritization a little bit of different way. And a lot of the comment from council members was centered around this is going to be good so that we understand why we keep talking about the transportation system that we need to have and we don't advance on it. This tool is going to clarify to them, well, this is the funding allocation you've provided this plan, and the funding allocation builds this much supply. If we want to build more supply, you have to allocate more funding to it for us, right? So the conversation we get to have in the commission is there's this funding allocated, and they come to us with the TFP and say, here's the bottom line. And then we have the conversation about what gets to go above the line or what doesn't, or how do we reprioritize that. And that's something that this body deliberates. But the supply, the pool of supply has been set, by that funding number, and we don't quite influence that as much. We just influence what we get to build, what specifically we get to build within that. And so I thank you for that clarification, because council was looking for an understanding of what, you know, we talk about these programs and these facilities and they don't come along. And so I wanted to share that, my recollection of that council meeting. I believe Commissioner Kurtz was next.
Maybe just another clarifying question on this. So the supply is actually, the units of supply is actually dollars, and the units of demand are person trips. Is that right?
That's how they start. We equate them to be mobility units, which are sort of the blend of the two, but so that we can do a straight up comparison between the two. But yes, they start off with person trips and dollars is a summary.
Okay. Well, and then just one more question then. So then is the conversion from supply dollars to mobility units, is that just a fixed like ratio, or does it actually depend on the individual type of project? Like, I guess there's no, is there something like, you know, if you build this, additional bike lane, it's worth, you know, more mobility units than some other project that, you know, adds more pedestrian gateways? It doesn't go to that level of detail. Is that right?
Well, the chair can cut me off when we get into gory levels of concurrency sort of administration at the city level. But more expensive projects generate more mobility units. And that's typically because more expensive projects take up a lot more space. Like a road widening costs a heck of a lot more than adding a bike lane does. And thus it costs more. So you get more mobility units out of credit for that. And there's been a lot of cities that have debated, is that the best way to calculate supply in terms of a dollar basis? And there's been lots of cities that have tried different approaches, but currently all of them have tried and stuck with the dollar-based, because it gets incredibly either subjective with what there's some people call policy dials, or complicated for other types of metrics. It's something that's implementable, and it says, here's our plan. You know, are we making progress on building out the plan? We've already vetted the plan is one that helps to link the community together, and they just track it in terms of dollars spent to complete the plan.
Okay.
Yes, the dollars that go into the supply bucket, about what percentage of those are dollars that are coming from new approved growth?
Can you restate the question?
Yeah, so the money in the supply bucket can come from state money, grants, a lot of different sources, right? Mm-hmm. But some comes from an approved 10-story building to go up. So in that supply bucket, how much is it coming from actual growth in the city versus other sources?
That is someone else on the call might be able to speak to that, but it's
I think that's an Eric Miller question, right?
A few pieces that are related to impact fees and then sort of the tax revenues generated on all the sales tax and other pieces, B&O tax of that building that when it gets occupied, it's probably a complicated answer, but I'm sure someone could give you a ballpark of what that number is, but I can't because I don't know the details.
Well, let's hold the question, because the commission will be charged with developing a concurrency implementation guide, which we'll look under the hood at all the gory details at that time.
Okay. And just to give you the backdrop for why I'm asking is I'm wondering if we would ever get ourselves into a really it's kind of a phasing issue where the city approves a development. And so on paper, all of a sudden it looks like there's all these impact fees and other things the building gets built, and then we realize the money made from that is not enough to offset all of the demand on the transportation system. You know, maybe we'd find out 2 years later. So what kind of checks and balances are there in the system that we won't end up in that situation? So that's the backdrop to my question. Thanks.
Commissioner Ting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chair Stash, I think the answer to your question would be we would look at the next iteration of programming for facilities, realize that there are metrics that are out of whack, and then shift the dollars in order to work on the projects that are important or that are, you know, where we missed. So I think the metrics and the performance dashboard will be critical to figuring out where the dollars go. Hopefully that makes sense. The comment that I had, though, is I understand the motivation behind a plan-based concurrency approach, and I understand that that is the will of council. My specific ask here, I guess, is twofold. One is just some clarification on how supply is made, but two, just being as transparent as possible in the MIP document about how the plan-based concurrency achieves concurrency, specifically when you talk about an apples-to-apples comparison between mobility unit supply versus mobility unit demand. I think in this conversation, we discovered they're not actually apples to apples because one is based on actual demand that's created and the other one is based on how much money we spend, which then by definition equals the amount of demand that we're going to have. But I think we're sort of, that ship has sailed. So I'm not going to, my ask isn't to change that. My ask is if we could just be more clear and transparent in the document that describes how a plan-based approach works, because I would feel really a lot more comfortable having my name on a document that doesn't imply that this is a true apples-to-apples comparison. Does that make sense?
So just, I would disagree that the linkage between why it's called plan-based is we have a plan for growth and we have a plan to build a transportation system. And the plan for the transportation system is based on how much money we can invest. We could just draw a plan that we don't know how much it costs, but if you can't implement it because it's too expensive, you might run yourself into trouble. So the concurrency is, or the linkage is that at half the planned development being built out, half of the planned transportation system has to be built out. They have to keep in proportion with each other. That's plan-based concurrency. Really, in a nutshell, we've talked about that in the past.
Yeah. So let me just interject because Commissioner Ting, I feel similarly to you, and I'd like to voice that sense that I have. My sense that is that where we are, I agree that this is what we need to do. I also wholly agree that this is the most transparent and clear way of doing it. The supply is estimated by the funds that have been allocated, which, to respond to vice chairs, those funds include impact fees. So there is a responsibility to this city, to the representatives of our city, to council, to set impact fees and revenue in this city to fund the transportation system appropriately. And so that conversation is what's happening. Those dollars need to come. What I fear with the plan that we have is that, and because there is no other way, I would agree with that, there is no clear or transparent way, and somebody called it checks and balances. Let's dream up a scenario that nobody's going to like here. None of us are in this commission, and the next transportation facilities plan come to be, and all the money is invested in just sidewalks. That's it. We've decided that that's what we need. There's a priority. Council faces as a priority. And so we all know in this commission that that doesn't actually going to balance our system. That's not going to meet the needs of all the different modes because we've chosen one mode or only one function to fund. And all our funds for 20 years are going to fund this one element that is going to make congestion worse or transit service worse, and bicycle facilities are going to suffer. Everything else would suffer. I'm putting a scenario-based approach. So, but the function that we've set, the system that we've set up, is that as long as that there's enough money allocated to the people, and we make that decision to program that money to some kind of transportation facility, to a certain degree, we've met the level of service. And so by having this level of service that is met by targets of multiple performance, there is a higher level of responsibility, in my opinion, asked of this commission and of council to be aware of how performance is going and to be very transparent about the degradations of the system. If there is growth and there aren't funds and the system is degrading in one perspective or another, that does not mean that we're not meeting concurrency. That just means we're degrading our level of service in the city. And so what is really important to me personally, I know this is what needs to be done, but to clarify that role of responsibly funding the transportation needs and responsibly moving the needle in making improvements to transportation. Because once you're saying that your demand is money, your supply is money, then you have to say, okay, how do I ensure that I have enough money to meet that demand? And I don't know exactly how that happens in the policy perspective, but that's the part that I fear. I think we have a good approach. We have a really good way to highlighting all of the ways that our transportation system is lacking and not meeting its full potential of performance. And we have a prioritization structure that takes into account different dimensions and goals. And so we assume that we can be responsible commission and council members and sort of listen to all the needs and balance them out when we're allocating the money. But there is the particular sort of pause. There isn't any more that check and balance to say, if we didn't meet this particular number, we can't grow anymore. And therefore, we have to fund transportation. There is no more sort of minimum requirement. And so how are we going to ensure? And at this time, we all feel that transportation is a priority. And now council members can see the level of funding that they're giving to the system and where it's degraded. But now the responsibility falls on council members to then actually raise the funds in whatever way they mean, or reallocate the funds to fund the transportation appropriately in a way that the previous system didn't quite work that way. Now it wasn't actually serving our needs, so we needed to replace it. But there is a little bit of a gap that I think has been voiced since the very beginning about this system. And I think we all agree that the system is the best that it could be. And personally, I feel very proud about all the work that we've done and how transparent it's going to end up being. But I do believe there is a level of responsibility of our elected officials and this commission to ensure, to be responsible, that the investments that we make actually meet the growth that we've been allocated. To a certain degree. So that, you know, I believe in us at this time, but that's, I think, when you talk about the checks and balances and when you talk about the system and embedding it in there, I understand the level of discomfort. I as well feel that level of discomfort because it is not automatic. It depends on all of us trying to make responsible decisions about the allocation of funds to a complex set of projects and hoping that we're doing the right thing for the next cycle and that those facilities are actually going to be the thing that improves our transportation system as well to a certain degree. It's a little bit of faith in that and in our process. So I think that's how I feel personally. And again, I really like this plan, but it is, I believe, important to be transparent about that the puzzle, the piece of the puzzle, that there needs to be clarity and we need to be held accountable to fund this from the elected officials to the commission to fund and choose projects that actually improve our performance on the network to satisfy the growth. Any other comments, questions, feedback? Okay, so we have 10 minutes until the meeting is over. I'm going to try to close this out if everyone's okay with this. I think we've had a very robust conversation. I do encourage, if you have concerns that will not allow you to move forward, that you really need to see in this plan before moving this forward to council, please get in touch with Kevin. Please have a discussion offline before next meeting. I would really appreciate it if we can be ready to vote this to council. We've worked really hard and council is expecting us to move forward with this. And so I'd really appreciate everyone's efforts to close their any nagging feelings that they can't live with after next session. Moving on, that finalizes our study session. And what is our next agenda item? We have meeting minutes from January 13. Does anybody have any substantial corrections to the minutes? Okay, hearing none, the minutes are approved. We do not have any unfinished business. We don't have any new business. So we can move on to oral and written communications. I don't see any hands. Michelle, did you want to say anything? All right. No public comment. Review of commission calendar. Kevin, can you walk us through?
Sure. So we already know two of the items for the March 10th meeting. We'll bring back the mobility implementation plan for approval, along with a brief transmittal letter to the council. And we'll dive into the transportation improvement program a little bit more. One new thing that will be introduced to the commission on March 10th is an introduction to the comprehensive plan update. It's a process that's done every 10 years, and it's managed by the Community Development Department, and staff from Community Development will come to the Transportation Commission and share an overview of the process to update the comprehensive plan and what the role and responsibility of the Transportation Commission will be in that context. So that's coming up next month. In April, we have two meetings scheduled. On April 14th, we'll have the hearing for the TIP. We will, with council direction, which we are assuming, we will begin to work on the multimodal concurrency implementation plan and code amendments. And that'll probably do it for that meeting. On the 28th, we'll begin, it'll be a workshop type session on April 28th, being led by my colleague Franz Lohenhurst on the Urban Core Bicycle Rapid Implementation Program. So it's taking a subset of the bicycle network that is described in the MIP and focusing on the urban core connections to emphasize relatively rapid implementation projects for those networks, the bicycle network corridor. So that's the next couple months. I will, I'll ask the chair to make sure she's available for the April 4th council meeting.
Very so, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, that's
really
all I have
on advance, Kevin.
Okay, that's what I have in the calendar for now. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. All right, so we're on to item 13, adjournment. Are there any objections to adjourning the meeting? Hearing none, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good discussion.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Okay. Have a good night.
Bye. Night.